We're live.
All right, all right, all right. Here, Matthew McConaughey with
the other Matthew McConaughey.
And we're rolling things in our hands. And, you know, the thing about children is that, Matthew, why don't you tell them the thing about children?
You got to teach them to roll their boogers from a real young age.
That's right.
When they're riding in the Lincoln.
With a Dallas Buyers Club, you know. Those are rookie numbers.
Wow. I don't think I'm going to call scene on that one, guys.
Why didn't you join in?
I didn't join in because, as you can probably hear, my voice is messed up.
Well, it doesn't require much voice.
All right.
I feel like
I did a little bit.
That's it, Amala. Great job.
Thank you so much, guys. Welcome to Will and Amala Live. Like I said, I'm having a battle with my own vocals right now, let alone Matthew McConaughey. So let's get into the stories from today. Why did we open with a Matthew McConaughey impression? Because McConaughey comes out against vaccine mandates. Here is the story from The Hill. Let me zoom it in for you guys so you can read a little bit better. Matthew McConaughey says that while he's received his COVID-19 shot, he's against mandating that his children get vaccinated. I couldn't mandate having to vaccinate the younger kids. I still want to find out more information, the Interstellar actor said Tuesday when asked at the New York Times Deal Book Summit about his stance on childhood vaccinations and whether to mandate them. Now, he goes on to say that he simply just needs more education in regard to these vaccinations with kids ages 5 to 11, but he will personally not be vaccinating his children.
Oh, he said he would personally not be vaccinating
them? Yes, he did.
That's good. That's very good.
Yep. He said, I didn't do it because somebody told me that I had to. I chose to do it, speaking in regard to his personal choice to be vaccinated. But he said, right now, I am not vaccinating mine in regard to his kids. I'll tell you that.
Tell you that, brother.
I'll tell you that.
My kids ain't getting vaccinated. No. That's good. That's really good that he said that.
You know, some might say it's based.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. Don't get me started.
Oh, but let me
tell you. Okay. First of all, it's very good because it's the very common sense approach of saying that I need more information and no one should be able to tell my kids what they are supposed to do, right? They don't need to have someone tell them what their kids are supposed to do, especially when the death rate for children is so low, right? It makes total sense. So Matthew McConaughey coming out and saying this is clearly a good thing. I mean, it's common sense.
Some might say it's all right.
Is that the only thing you know how to say?
That is the only thing I know how to say.
It's all right. It's the only thing you know how to say.
No, but it's good because he's going to influence a lot of people. We bring this up every time we have a celebrity make what we'd call a based statement or just say something that is common sense to the American people and take onus of their own choices in a way that is contrary to what most people are doing or at least what the woke mob is doing. So hearing Matthew McConaughey say that he is personally not going to be vaccinating his kids, that he has plenty of questions when it comes to vaccine mandates, and that he personally would never mandate vaccinations for children is a really important thing because obviously Matthew McConaughey has a wide range audience, but a lot of the people that watch him are older and they are parents. And to hear somebody with his influence say, no, we need to question this and it's not right to put vaccine mandates up for children is a really important thing.
I'm sure you got a lot of questions. It is good. But again, like I was talking about before, we are kind of arguing, not really arguing, we were just talking about before about what we wanted to title the stream on based McConaughey. And I was like, I don't know if I want to call it based McConaughey because I don't necessarily agree with that he is based for saying this because, you know, it's just so common sense to say this. I mean, this is literally, it's such a common sense thing to say. To herald it as like something really brave or unique is pretty wild. You know, this should be the standard. It should be the standard to come out and say, yeah, I don't want mandates for children. I mean, that should be just so obvious, you know, even no matter what political affiliation you are. So,
but it's not common enough to be the mainstream narrative. And Matthew McConaughey stood up and said, no, I don't agree with this. So that's based.
I see what you're saying, but I always want them to do more. It's like, okay, if he's making
Will
that,
always
if he's making
wants
that,
more.
Well, yeah, I do want more. If he's making that argument about his children, you know, why not make that argument about everyone? You know, what about adults? Should adults be able to choose? Well, you didn't say that.
There's definitely nuance, and I think definitely you can step further into the realm of common sense than he did, but nobody's doing what he's doing right now, and it's, you know, it's an important thing for somebody of his caliber to say that.
Right, but then he also comes out and says a bunch of dumb stuff, too.
Yes, that this is always Will's point. Will goes, you know, why celebrate these celebrities, you know, the Ice Cubes, the Nicki Minajs, the Pitbulls, or whatever, because then around the corner they're going to say something stupid, but... We're not championing the stupid things they say. I'm championing this one moment of mental clarity.
I know, that's what I'm saying. So it's like, yeah. I don't want to come out and say like, oh, Matthew McConaughey. Like, people will come out on Twitter. Conservatives will come out on Twitter and be like, why can't we all just be more like Matthew McConaughey? Like, coming out and saying this common sense. Go, Matthew McConaughey. I'm like, shut up. Like, he come out and said one thing that is baseline, not even like that crazy at all. It's like, I'm not going to sit here and now kiss Matthew McConaughey's butt for coming out and saying this. You know, it's good. I'm not saying it's not good.
Let's go, Matthew.
Yeah, like that's what I'm saying. Let's go, Matthew. Like, it's good that he came out and say this. There's no negative side for him saying this. I'm just saying the positive is not like, conservatives, it looks kind of pathetic when conservatives take like political or entertainment figures and say like, oh, this is so great. Like, we literally have a video, PragerU, that says celebrities, who cares what you think? You know, it's like, if we have a video like that, and then it's like they come out and say something moderately good. It's like, well, why now do we care what they think? I'm like, this is some actor, you know, who says something that's kind of good.
But I do think you mentioned the adult vaccination thing. I do think the subtext of this is that he's anti-mandate in general. Like he said in his quote, I'm vaccinated, my wife's vaccinated. I didn't do it because somebody told me I had to. I chose to do it. Which sounds to me like he's just anti-mandate in general.
Well, he didn't say that.
I just think there's an inference to be made from that statement.
You assume and you make a, you know, you and me. I would never assume on something like that.
But let's
especially
not forget,
when they get so much pressure from people, you know, to say something, these celebrities.
Let's not forget, we were hearing Matthew McConaughey's name a while ago because he was sort of floating around and flirting with the idea of running for Texas governor.
I would love to flirt with Matthew McConaughey.
I think everybody in this room right now, Will, and Taylor.
He's got me dazed and confused about my sexuality. No.
He can be the wolf on my wall.
Sorry. Oh, no. No. Oh, that's horrible.
So no, it's good. I'm not saying it's not good. You understand what I'm saying, audience?
Yes. I think everybody understands. I think everybody understands what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think of that quote, in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
It is.
Right now, the deceit is universal. And so having any measure of common sense is a big victory against the universal deceit. So that is worth celebrating. But I totally get what you're saying. It's like, okay, well, if you're anti-mandate, then have enough courage to say I'm anti-mandate. Don't just, you know, he's drawing the line on the kid stuff, but like, he's not forcefully coming out in support of or against mandates or in support of freedom necessarily.
Right.
But at the same time, he is poking holes in the mainstream narrative that's right. Like, this is...
I guess I see it so many times. Like, you go on Twitter, and especially for us, we're on conservative Twitter a lot of the time because that's what we do. We follow a lot of these people. And so I'll see so many things from these, like, conservative influencers or pundits, whoever, commentators. And it's like, dude, I just saw, like, 20 other people say the exact same thing as you. Like, there are certain topics and things that you can say that are the okay approved stuff. This is even in conservative circles. This isn't just a left-wing thing. This is just a media thing in general. If you're in the conservative sphere of influence, there are certain things that you can say that are like inside the conservative norm that you know are safe to say, right? And so it's like the people who are like really truth tellers, really go-getters, go against that grain and say, I'm not going to be tied to a certain, you know, ideological group. I'm going to say whatever I believe to be true. And so in this case, you know, I guess I just get weary of people being able to say a bare minimum type of stance to like earn some sort of clout from that bare minimum stance without having to think about it, because they know there won't be any consequences because the idea is settled. You understand what I mean? Like, you go on Twitter, you see these people. It's like the same conservative people all the time saying the exact same things that other conservative people are saying without any nuance. And it's like, that is the approved conservative stance that you're allowed to take, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the same on the left. It's the same in entertainment. It's all these things, like the approved things to say. And so I guess I just kind of get like weathered of the fact that it's like, okay, eventually, you know, I want it to be like a real truth teller. It's like, you know, you can say this, not saying it's bad, but you know, you always want more, you know? It's like you get one burger at In-N-Out.
And then you can't just do one.
I want another one.
That's true. That's what I did today.
I know. I didn't have In-N-Out.
Well,
you guys didn't even ask.
Sucks to suck. You ate your lunch right in front of us, and then we went to In-N-Out.
At like 11 a.m.
10:45.
Yeah, that's also.
Well, I was up at like 5:30 today, so I had a really early breakfast, and then at lunch then.
Because you went to bed at 9 p.m.?
Yeah. I went to bed early last night. I was so tired.
Old man.
Yeah. Well, it's better. I like waking up early.
Okay. Well, good for you, Will.
All right.
All right. All right. All right. Now, Matthew McConaughey is not the only celebrity news that we have today, and it's not the only celebrity news in regard to vaccination status. Shailene Woodley, you know her from a multitude of things. She's from Fault in Our Stars. She's been in Divergent. What else is Shailene Woodley in?
She was in
Big Little Lies, the HBO show. She's a pretty big actress.
Twilight? No, that's Kristen Stewart.
That's Kristen Stewart. She was also in a movie called Spectacular Now. I've seen a lot of Shailene Woodley movies.
Was she in 16 and Pregnant?
Yes. She was also in 16 and Pregnant, I believe. No, not 16 and Pregnant.
If you guys didn't see that.
Yeah.
No. It's not 16 and Pregnant. It's called like American something.
American Pregnant.
No, gosh. Anyways, the ones that I mentioned, you probably know her from The Fault in Our Stars, the Divergent series, The Spectacular Now, and Big Little Lies on HBO. She's a very big actress. She's also the fiance of Aaron Rodgers, who's been taking some heat right now for not being vaccinated and coming out and defending his status of not being vaccinated. So we saw Aaron Rodgers go on the Pat McAfee show and defend his choices. We went through the NFL guidelines when it comes to COVID-19 vaccinations and what they can and cannot do. And Shailene Woodley has come to bat for her man, okay? As we all... Why is that funny?
The way you said it.
Come to bat for her
for your man,
okay? So... Essentially what happened is Aaron Rodgers was accused of going out and going against quarantine protocol for going to a coffee shop. And they showed this picture of Aaron Rodgers. Here's the picture. Clearly not Aaron Rodgers, but this is the accusation that they made. And Shailene Woodley, although not very tastefully or tactfully, posted on Instagram saying, literally, y'all need to calm the F down. This is straight up hilarious. News outlets still grasping at straws to disparage Aaron, finding random effing men on the streets of LA and saying it's him. I know Aaron's body very well. First off, his feet.
His feet.
And no offense to this random dude, Aaron's feet are a lot bigger. Wink face.
What? There's a wink face, really? Ew.
Yeah.
Gross.
So we're not going to champion this one like we championed Matthew McConaughey, but I don't know.
Well, no, that is a big deal. The fact that this is like fiance.
Fiance.
Yeah, that she's defending him.
It is, you know? Yeah.
Like through better or worse, you're supposed to defend your partner, right?
Now
like
Will cares what the celebrity's saying.
No, I don't care in the sense of what she actually said. I care in the fact that she's defending her husband.
Yep.
Or fiance. Yeah.
Soon to be husband.
Yeah, soon to be husband. Like, that's what means a lot. You know, the fact that, you know, so many celebrity relationships are just about like, oh, we're going to get married and sign a contract with E! News so that all of our wedding and this stuff is like exclusive to them and like all sorts of stuff like that. So the fact that she's being like real about it, even if she doesn't agree with everything that her husband's doing, she's still like coming out and supporting him, which is a big deal.
Yeah, I think we're seeing a schism in Hollywood more than ever before. I've never seen so many celebrities come out of the woodworks with different opinions that are making them go viral and causing all these headlines. It's never been the issue that it is now. And it's probably because we've reached a breaking point on an issue that is truly affecting people's day-to-day lives and their day-to-day choices. And now Hollywood has no choice but to expose the ones who go against this ideology.
You want traditionalism back in Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy. It was so easy before, maybe 2 years ago, maybe we'll say 5 years ago, for Hollywood actors to just go along with the leftist ideology, go along with the mainstream narrative, the feminist narrative, the systemic racism narrative, whatever. But now that it's coming to first class citizen versus second class citizen, people are speaking up. This is another celebrity added to the long list of people. What we went over the list yesterday, Nicki Minaj, Ice Cube, Aaron Rodgers, Shailene Woodley, Matthew McConaughey now. I'm sure there's more. Taylor, do you have any others?
Dave Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle. Good one.
And I'm sure there's more.
Joe
sure there's
Joe
more.
Rogan.
Yeah.
Well, like he's always been based. He's always been basic. I know this is like a Family Feud.
Yeah, there
game.
Were six of them too. Which is like, aren't there six choices in Family Feud? Right.
Show me Dave Chappelle. Yeah.
You've got your the NBA players, Draymond Green. Kyrie Who was the Irving. Other one?
Kyrie.
Jonathan
Kyrie,
Isaac.
Jonathan mm-hmm. Isaac. That's 10.
The guy
pretty
with
big.
The foreign. Who's that guy?
Chris Pratt.
Ennis Cantor. China.
Right.
That's 12. That's 12 really big celebrities who have taken a stance on these issues and done it publicly.
My favorite celebrity thing that just happened was Shaq. Did you guys see what Shaq said?
No.
He said, he was in reference to his children, he said, "They're not rich. I'm rich."
Oh, yeah. I saw that. That was funny.
Not
was
really awesome. A political stance, but yes.
Well, it's kind of political because it's like you're not teaching your kids to be entitled, even though you're like one of the richest celebrities out there. You know, you made so much money doing Dr. Scholl's and all this other stuff and playing basketball. You're like still teaching your kids good values. So it's like, you are responsible for your own upbringing and upbringing, but you know, your money and like, I'm not just going to give it all to you. This is my money.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
We can add Shaq to the list.
Add Shaq to the list.
That's number 13.
Bill Maher.
Get Shaq's.
Emilio Estevez.
Oh yeah.
We've got so many guys. Are we going to have a conservative Hollywood?
Well,
Gina Carano. Who was the host that Daily Wire just hired to, the ESPN girl?
Oh, yeah, I forget her name.
Ashley something, I believe.
Allison Williams? No, that's a different one.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't remember her name. But we are building a small entourage.
Oh, I forgot to mention to you that we got invited to a thing.
What?
Yeah.
What thing?
A thing for like Hollywood celebrities.
Okay.
Yeah. I forgot to mention it to you.
Okay. Interesting. Well, we'll bring you guys behind the scenes.
Not based enough.
Yeah.
I saw that thing you said. It wasn't good enough.
Right. Well, it wasn't enough.
Yeah. Well, that's like I was talking with someone today. I won't say names, but they went into a restaurant and, you know, they asked for the card, the vax card, once they get into the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, this is ridiculous. And so then they go sit down outside and the girl who like asked for the vax card comes out and is like, I know this is stupid. I'm on your side. You know, I'm with you. It's like, you're not really on our side. If you were on our side, then you wouldn't enforce it.
Yeah, you wouldn't ask.
You
would do something.
Yeah, you would like not do it. So it's like, you know, you can say you're based, but until you like do it, how much does it really mean?
Taylor and I had that happen to us at one of our favorite places, our favorite lunch spot around the office. This lady, I started talking about it because they had a little vaccine paper on their wall. And I was just like, F that. How dare you ask somebody for a passport? And she walks past and she's a server there and she's like, oh yeah, well, I totally feel the same way. And like, my husband got forced to get it because, like, you know, he works this job and he has to provide for our kids, which I totally get that. I'm not knocking that. But like, do something.
Yeah.
Say it. And then I'm like, oh, there's a rally. Like, you can go to this rally on Monday. She's like, oh yeah, well, I'll see what I can do.
Just I know.
Flip the table.
I know. I mean, it's very frustrating. You know, and it's like, it's not like the police are in there right now while you're asking me, like, I'm about to buy a croissant and then you're asking me for my vax passport. It's like the police aren't in here. Just don't ask me.
I know.
Especially if you say you agree. Like, I go to this Whole Foods.
You could be a secret shopper, though.
Yeah, I could be. That's
true. You're like, busted. I'm part of the CDC.
Get on the ground. No, I like I go to this Whole Foods, right? I go to this Whole Foods over by my place and that's where I get some of my groceries. And this guy, he's like a huge fan of me. And like, I always go in with no mask, no anything. And he never says anything. He's just the man, you know? And we're just like hanging out in the checkout line.
Mm-hmm.
And he like gave me an employee discount too, which was really cool. Cause you know how expensive those bananas at Whole Foods can be. But he actually does it. He like stands up for it, which is cool. You know, be like that guy.
Okay.
Whole Foods guy. I won't say his name, but he's great. You know who you are if you're watching.
Yeah. You know who you are. Whole Foods guy. This next story is a funny
one. In a world
full
of half food guys.
Be a Whole Foods guy. Yeah, absolutely. This next one is just a funny little haha moment from Pfizer. They posted this meme that you guys can check out. The human brain grasping onto wild conspiracy theories and then science slowly trying to pull the human brain away from the conspiracy theories in regard to Pfizer vaccinations.
Wait. People were asking, what is ratioed? And so if you look at this picture, you see the number of quote tweets is 16,500. The number of likes is 4,500. 53. So that's being ratioed. It means that everyone's talking about what you said, about how terrible or stupid it was, and not that they're actually liking and agreeing with what you said.
Yes, more people, a ratio of more people have decided that you've made a stupid post rather than liking your post.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what ratioed means. And getting ratioed, it's quite embarrassing in the modern age.
It's happened to me, for sure.
I don't know that I've been ratioed.
Yeah, no, you're too sweet. But I've been ratioed, for sure. You know,
I'm
by
too
the
nice.
Left, by the leftists. You know, the leftists will find a tweet and ratio me. And I'm like, conservatives, come on. Please come defend. Like retweet this and like say nice things, but they don't.
They don't.
No, they sometimes do. They sometimes do. But that was just like an unbelievable tweet. It was about abortion. And I got totally ratioed. Hardcore. Anyway, it's funny that science is pulling the brain away from like looking at new information because this is science. The science
right.
is settled. Science is pulling it away.
Exactly.
How ironic is that? The point that they're trying to make is literally null and void by the picture that they posted.
Yeah.
Literally.
I keep seeing that quote lately. If you can't question it, it's not science, it's propaganda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when has science ever not been about questioning something? That is what science is. I mean, science is going and questioning different things. Science is never settled. Anyone who says the science is settled, this could be on anything. The science is not settled on anything. I mean, that's the point of science, that people are always discovering new things and having different papers and lectures and all sorts of different hypotheses and checking things out. Like, that's the point. That is the point of science. To say that it's settled is just a farce. It's just not true. And to tell people that they shouldn't be looking to what they are calling wild conspiracy theories, which really just means truth, and they should be looking at science, it's not like the people who are following Pfizer are scientists themselves. You know, like they should be looking at what others, there are tons of other scientists who have different points of view. That is what it is all about. I mean, the fact that you can't disagree with them or you're an evil person. The CEO of Pfizer came out yesterday and said people who make erroneous claims or wild conspiracy theories about the vaccine are criminals.
Criminals.
Criminals. I am calling for Pfizer to be abolished and to have all of its assets stripped. Okay. Because that
by the federal government.
By the federal government. Do you know the biggest federal crime lawsuit ever? It was against Pfizer. Yep. $2.3 billion for lying to doctors and all of this.
They get money from them. They're not going to abolish Pfizer, Will.
I'm not saying we should.
This is wishful thinking.
Obviously. I'm just saying what I would do if I was emperor. But,
okay.
But the biggest criminal payout in history of America was Pfizer back in 2009. $2.3 billion. For malpractice and all sorts of other things.
It doesn't surprise me at all. They are more interested in their bottom line than they are interested in your health and wellness. So is any of this surprising at all? No. And
well,
when you're in line,
surprising if you have no idea about it.
I don't
know.
When you're in line for your 15th booster shot, are you still going to be surprised? Come on.
Well, this meme too, it just feels like a taunt on top of everything else. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, and by the way,
right.
F you, we can do whatever we want.
But yeah, the good
literally
news
they
is
can do whatever they want.
The good news is the internet got to respond with their own memes.
Right.
Because Libs of TikTok posted a blank version of this and said, guys, create your meme responses to this. And there are some really, really fun ones here. Here's one from Kyle Becker. The ball says, get fully vaxxed and you'll be free again. And America's grasping for it. And holding America back is Big Pharma.
Yeah, see?
So there's no way, there's absolutely no way that this is going to give you your freedom back. I think people know that. Here's another one. Looking at a butterfly that's corporate propaganda. Is this science?
Two jabs.
With the two jabs and his mask still on. That's hilarious.
That looks so painful.
Here's one. Natural immunity. We're grasping for it. Pfizer, you'll be our customer for life. That's exactly what it's going to be. If you
just
think
know
it
that
stops.
If you, just know that if you don't get your 30th booster shot and you're one of those only 29 booster shot type of people, you're a racist.
Right.
Okay? Just know that.
Here's this one. Understanding science. Yep, got it. And he's scoping out his wad of money.
Wad of Benjamins.
Yep, the wad of Benjis, boys.
Oh, man.
That's what science is.
These days it is.
Yeah.
These days this is what science is. And to look at everything that's happening right now and the amount of profit being garnered from it and not, you know, have skepticism is really concerning. I think that's what's more concerning than ever. I mean, what they're doing is evil, but the fact that nobody's questioning it is just jarring.
Right. And listen, in a free market system, profit incentive, there's nothing wrong with profit incentives for a company to make a product that people actually need. But then when you have the taxpayer paying for it because it's lobbied from the government to be mandated by people, I mean, how you're calling people criminals on something that you have mandated them to take. How do you not say these are the bad guys?
Right.
You know, it's like this isn't a free market system.
Yeah, it's not to say that they shouldn't profit off of it in some way. That is like one of the foundations of American innovation and why we are so competitive and why we try so hard to innovate and create things. It's because we know if we create a good product, we will gain capital off of it. But it's just...
No, I mean, if you can undercut the American people...
Exactly, exactly.
For making a profit that only benefits you
mm-hmm.
with a product that people didn't want...
And then you get to lie about it.
That's not the free market. That's the opposite of what the free market is. You are mandating that people buy your product. Literally, you are mandating that the American populace pay for it out of their tax dollars.
And if it harms them, you can't sue them.
Exactly. They're not responsible for it. So, yeah, this is, you know, this for people saying like, oh, this is a free. No, no, not at all. It's not a free market.
No.
All right.
All right. All right. All right. I think that's our spiel on that for the day.
Yeah, before PragerU gets mad.
Yeah. Before we, you know, just get into some hot water with YouTube and we start getting flags and censorship.
Which happened to us yesterday, by the way.
Right.
Oh, yeah. We should talk about
flags.
That.
Yeah. Two flags. YouTube was the climate. We talked about climate. And so they put a thing on that.
And what did it say?
I don't remember. It was like linking to.
It links to like, what is climate change? Click here to learn more.
Approved information, because we're saying non-approved information.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And then the other one on Facebook.
Was vaccination.
Facebook, for the same episode, yeah, they put Facebook on the same episode, was apparently okay with climate stuff, but they put a vax info warning on there as well.
Mm-hmm.
We just can't run from it.
No.
But what you were saying before, Will, about science is like, science is questioning things. It's asking, it's raising different perspectives, and we're citing people, other scientists who have contrarian viewpoints. But what's so scary is you have big tech being like, no, you're not allowed to say that. And then big pharma mandating things and calling you, saying you should be put in jail if you say something to the contrary. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Right. No, big media doing the same thing. And then big media gets money from big pharma. It's like they all just work together in cahoots.
All the big things are just...
All the big things.
Symbiotic. All the big ones. Fight big. Fight B-I-G.
Big dairy. big chicken.
Big sugar.
Big Aaron Rodgers feet.
Big Aaron. Don't make me laugh too hard.
Big feet is all over us.
Nike's in big feet.
Oh my God. Moving on. Oh my gosh. So that was our small internet win for the day, getting to own Pfizer on the internet and ratio them. That was super cool. But we have an even bigger win. Chris Rufo broke this one for us. Here is the tweet. Winning the Washington Post, which has been pushing critical race denialism for more than a year now, admits that critical race theory is absolutely being taught in Virginia public schools. Their lies are crumbling. Let's break this down before we get into the article itself, or at least the excerpt from the article. You have heard over and over on every single news outlet, CRT is nothing more than a legal theory created in the 1970s. It's not being taught in K-12 schools. It's not being taught to your children. There are no tenets of CRT and race existentialism being taught to your children. And now we have an admission from the Washington Post, a media outlet that has contributed to this great lie for a very long time. I'll read the article here, just a part of it. Those who say it has become a refrain on the left and its media echo chamber following Republican Glenn Youngkin's victory in Virginia's governor's race. Critical race theory is not being taught in schools. PBS White House correspondent Yamichi Alcindor recently accused Republicans of winning by lying about critical race theory. This is something that has happened countless amounts of times. Time and time again, it has happened.
Mm-hmm.
In the next paragraph, this Washington Post article writes, this is demonstrably false. Virginia's Loudoun County public schools, which were ground zero in the debate over the role of parents in their kids' education, paid $314,000 for critical race theory coaching for its teachers from the Equity Collaborative.
Yeah. Just because you change the name on something or say that it's not real doesn't mean it's not real.
Exactly. And that's what they've done, is they've taken critical race theory, taken out the core tenets and the fundamentals of its teaching, distilled them down for young people, put them in schools, and then said, I don't see the letter CRT anywhere in this curriculum. How dare you accuse me of teaching critical race theory? I see diversity. I see equity. I see inclusion, which are all fundamental to critical race theory, but I don't see critical race theory. And they gaslight you.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be defined. Like, they don't have to make a definition for it, because they feel like if they make a definition for it, then people will wake up and understand what's actually going on. Critical race theory sounds like a very high level kind of scary thing. But if they can distill that down into white people suck and black people are oppressed, and just teach it as not a political statement, this is just the way of the world, we're just teaching history now, then of course they're going to get people to be on board with it.
And that's what the left does best. It's really... nothing on the left, for the most part, is based on logical reasoning or factual information. For the most part, what they do is simply marketing. That's all they do, is go, okay, here's an issue. Let me think of my most radical solution to this issue, and I'm going to market this issue to people. I'm going to tell them that when it comes to the border, shouldn't we want everybody to lead a successful life? And doesn't that sound great? Doesn't that sound beautiful? Shouldn't we want to teach true history in schools? Sure, that sounds fantastic. Don't we want all people to feel equal and have equal opportunity? Absolutely, which is why everything that the left says sounds so beautiful in theory. And then they go, well, actually, I want to do that through opening our borders. And actually, I want to do that through equity and making sure we regulate and have big government. And actually, what I want to do is teach white kids that they're oppressors and black kids that they're victims to society.
Instead of the left admitting and coming out and saying, we think black kids are stupid, so we want to get them into, make sure that they get into school, they say, let's have affirmative action, right? It's something that affirmative action, like you hear the words, it sounds much better on paper than saying, we think black kids are dumb.
Yep.
From a leftist, right? It sounds much better to say affirmative action. Or think about like global warming. Like, it used to be global warming. Everyone used to say global warming. When was the last time you heard someone say global warming, except for like your grandpa talking about, you know, what the left, what's wrong with the left? Like, everyone says climate change now.
Climate crisis. Yeah.
Like, conservatives should go back to saying global warming. That's my thing for today. Mm-hmm. Conservatives should go back to saying global warming, because that is what the left first started with. They said global warming, and then they changed it to climate change because they knew that they were wrong.
Yeah.
They knew that they couldn't prove that this global warming was happening in the way that they did. That's why they changed it to climate change. Everyone should go back to never calling it climate change again and only call it global warming.
I'm going back to the ozone layer. We have to worry about
honestly.
Your hairsprays.
Yeah, where is this ozone layer?
Follow the original ball, not the 17 others that they throw into the court after you've found the first one. It's ridiculous, and that's what they do. Is as soon as you feel like, oh, I have a grasp on this, I know how to fight this, I know exactly how we're going to legislate against this, I know how we're going to talk to voters, I know how we're going to campaign, they go, oh, well, that wasn't the thing we were doing in the first place. Here's this other thing. Here's this other thing. And it's because you are constantly in this rat race, unable to find your true north anymore because they've switched it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the Democrats, they were the KKK. That's true. Oh, but then the party switched. So actually they were Republicans. It's
right.
Like, no, let's get this right. Okay. Just go back in history and look, these things that you're saying didn't happen, but they can change the language around an issue to make it seem like their agenda is the one that people should be following when it's not. That is not true. You are changing the language. You can change the language and you can change the way you frame an argument all you like, but people who are real truth seekers will find out the truth. We know who you are.
And they are.
We see you.
Yeah. We see you.
Let's talk about a switch that's happening here, because the Virginia School Board had spoken about, at least a few members spoke about, these sexually explicit books that their young kids are being taught about. And they made a comment saying those books should be thrown in a fire. The books that we are giving to 8-year-olds about.
Who said that?
A few of the school board members at this Virginia School Board said we should throw these books in a fire because they're teaching young, 8 to 13-year-olds about sexually explicit pornographic information. And now they're being compared to Fahrenheit 451. They're being called the fascists.
Yeah.
Well, this is what they do.
These people want to burn our pornographic children's books. This is obviously an oligarchy, and they want to control us through tyranny, silencing speech. And also, if you don't like pornographic children's books, you're a Nazi.
Yeah. They're trying to burn true gay pornographic information for your 8-year-old. This is Nazism. This is fascism. This is the retelling of history. But also, America wasn't founded in 1776. It was actually 1619.
Don't you know the Nazis burned all the pornographic gay kids' books? That's what they did too. What are we seeing? That's like, come on.
Oh my goodness.
Come on, man.
Come on, man.
Come on, man.
Chocolate chip ice cream, man.
No, they can, if they can call us, if they can label us as racist or Nazi or any of these things, then they can win the argument. They can win the argument every time because nobody wants to be called a Nazi. I don't care how crazy you are. No one wants to be called a Nazi unless you're an actual Nazi and proud of it. But other than that, no one wants to be called a Nazi. I don't like it when people call me Nazi. I don't like it when people call me racist. These are just horribly untrue things. You know, and then when people hear like, oh, Will Witt's a racist or Will Witt's a Nazi, it gives them a horrible taste in their mouth. They don't even know me, but someone has called me a Nazi, right? That's like the worst thing. You could literally call someone, and someone on Twitter every single day, 10 times a day, is calling me that, or a white supremacist every single day, all day. And it's like you have no problem just throwing that around, controlling the culture so that anyone else who might be a little mixed up, like not know what they think about politics, they go onto my Twitter, they go onto my Instagram, and they see that I'm called a Nazi, and they're like, well, I don't want to have any association with a Nazi or a white supremacist. You know, you control how you talk about people. You control the arguments. You frame them however you want, and you can win that way. You don't have to have good arguments. All you have to do is be able to frame them in the best way possible through marketing and through scare tactics and through intimidation. And that's exactly what the left has done in this country to control the populace.
I mean, it's the easiest thing to do, and it's not, you know, it's no coincidence that it's happening in education first, because the earlier that you can do this, the better it's going to be, and the more successful your ideology is going to take grasp. And that's been in any regime that has ever existed, any totalitarian regime, one of the first things they do is go for the education system, and they are going to make it very difficult for you to combat it. They are going to call you domestic terrorists for fighting against it. They are going to try to label you the fascist when that is exactly what they are. And it's a hard narrative to fight against.
I know, in communist Russia, when they were overtaking the government, I mean, they were, the Communist Party was calling normal people, like the farmers and normal merchants and tradesmen, they're calling them part of the bourgeois.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, this guy's just like tilling corn out in the countryside.
It's crazy.
Because he doesn't want to join your communist revolution, he's now part of the bourgeois.
Yeah.
It's like, no, this is just a normal guy who's trying to live his life, right? This is how these parents are. You think they want to go to a school board meeting and scream at people for how terrible they're being to their students? Of course not. They want to go to their kid's soccer game, or they want to, you know, do whatever it is.
They want to send their kids off to school knowing that they've put them in good hands. That's
right.
The foundation of what parents want.
They don't want to be doing this. But when you get called evil and a domestic terrorist and all these horrible things over and over and over again, you got to go and fight against it, you know? But they'll continue to slander you. They will always slander you because they don't have the facts or the actual rebuttals to say something about you. All the articles that have been written about me, I mean, all over the internet, they just don't have any substance. The articles about PragerU, they don't have substance. They say white supremacist, they say racist, but they don't give any examples of how I am that. They never do.
They never do. And they never will. And guys, for a moment, let's step out of critical race theory and vaccine mandates and just talk about something cultural for young people. Hi, everybody. We have a special guest on our show today, Ramsey personality Ken Coleman, and author of From Paycheck to Purpose, The Clear Path to Doing Work That You Love. Ken, thank you so much for being on Will and Amla Live.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. So I wanted to start out, you know, something about me that people who watch our show or just know me in general know that I dropped out of college to do what I do. I was able to find purpose in my career, and I still very much do in so much of the things that I do, speaking, writing, doing a show, all of this, the other videos. I find a lot of purpose in that. And something that you're talking about in your new book, I mean, I talk to kids and young people almost every single day who send me a message and they're like, what do I do about this? Or how am I supposed to get involved with this organization? Or how am I supposed to feel passionate about something when these people who are in the upper management hate me, you know, all these different questions. And so just in terms of all of those different unknowns that people have, how should young people deal with the unknowns in their life that they don't really know where to go from here? How do you say they deal with that?
Well, first let me say that I'm a college dropout as well. Went right into politics and never looked back, and then eventually moved on to broadcasting. No degree necessary, by the way. So I'm very excited about that. So the answer is, how do we get clear? How do we answer the age-old question that nobody has to teach us how to ask, which is something along the lines of, what should I do with my life? Like, why am I here? And it's a very big question. And for many, millions of people, they never really dive into it. It's too scary because of the fear of the unknown, which I think is the greatest fear that we all have, the unknown. So how do we address the fear of the unknown? Well, it's knowledge. How do we get knowledge that will allow us to answer the question, what should I do with my life? It's a three-part process of discovery. And I write about it in the book. In the first stage of the seven stages in the book, From Paycheck to Purpose, we unpack Get Clear. So what does that look like? There are three indicators. If you think of these indicators like a dashboard on a car, these indicators are something we're constantly checking throughout our life. Here they are. Number one is talent. What I do best. What do I do best? What has always come easy for me? What are those hard skills that I have? What are those people skills that I have? What are those character traits that I have that I know I'm above average on? And I'm very clear on that. I need to get clear on that. That's talent, what I do best. Now, before we move to the second indicator, as you get clear on what you do best, you have to start looking at that as a tool, a premium tool, to focus then on the work that you love, which is second indicator, passion. What work do I love to do? I love this work so much. When I think about this task or this role, I get excited. When I'm in the middle of it, time seems to stand still. And then, because all work creates results, what's the third indicator? It's mission. These are results that matter deeply to us. Your generation, the audience, this generation cares more about this than previous generations. They want to know, is there a value in my life or values that connect to the results of my work? So mission are the results that I want to create. So here's what purpose looks like to get clear. I use what I do best to do work I love to produce results that matter to me. When you can look into the marketplace of jobs and see how all three of those are in alignment, now you can be sure that this is the type of work that you were created to do.
Interesting. So I think I can springboard off of the answer that you just gave and talk about what's happening right now in our culture, specifically in America. And it's what's been termed the great resignation. A lot of people that left their jobs or were laid off from their jobs during COVID are now choosing not to return into the job market, to the tune of millions now. And a lot of people are saying, particularly on the conservative side, this is because the government has subsidized unemployment. They've given people stimulus checks. They've paid them to essentially sit at home and do nothing. But a lot of other people are saying it's because people had time to sit at home and realize that they're not pursuing their passions. What is your take on what's happening right now in the job market?
It's a great question. I think it's both and. I do think there was a clear incentive to stay home. But I also think the second factor that you mentioned is absolutely at play. I think that what happens is when you're being paid to stay home, and we're talking about lower wage earners here, where the federal unemployment along with state unemployment, that combined was a bigger paycheck than maybe people who were waitressing, working in retail stores, working at entertainment or let's call it tourism type jobs. So there was an incentive to not go back. But I also think that people are going, I don't need to go back yet. So I want to sit here and think about what it is I really want to do. And I think there are two factors driving that. When the pandemic first hit, let's go back to March of 2020 for reference, we had the most change in our lifetime that has ever been forced on the planet. It was forced on us. We went home to either work, or we were furloughed, or we were laid off. Our kids came home. Everything changed. And we humans don't like change normally because it, again, involves the fear of the unknown that I mentioned earlier. So here's what happened. That massive change was one storm coming this way. And we were forced to just eat change every meal of the day. It was unbelievable. The second storm that came in was our mortality. When we heard news, whether we believed it on a level or not, people dying, people very sick, how risky is it? As things were unfolding, it forced us to look at our mortality and our contribution in life. And I think those two storms came together and people are basically going, wait, what do I want to do with my life? There's more to life than just a J-O-B. I long to make a difference. And I think that's the factor that's driving record numbers, as you mentioned, in August, 4.3 million people changed jobs. They didn't go home and sit. They're leveling up. And why I wrote From Paycheck to Purpose is because that's a trap for so many people to chase a paycheck only, to find that 2 months later, after the high of the promotion and the bigger paycheck is worn off, they still are longing for something. And I'm going to tell you what they're longing for. Contribution, meaning. You need to have impact along with the income.
Do you think that young people, I mean, this is, I'm going to say, I think I do. You can tell me what you think. I think that there's young people who put almost too much credence into that meaning category of their work. And so they sacrifice maybe getting a high paying job or doing something that might be good for their family, or maybe the ability to get out of their parents' basement or something like this. And they put aside things that actually matter in a career when you're looking forward for the future, because they say, oh, this thing isn't meaningful enough. When in lots of cases, like for me, when I started my career, just again, using myself as an example, when I started doing stuff in this space, I wasn't doing what you would call meaningful work. I mean, I had to do a lot of busy work and things that, you know, to get my start, no one was going to take me in without, you know, any sort of credibility. So do you think that young people are putting too much in the beginning into this meaningful type of work, and that really they should be focused on acquiring skills and understanding how the world actually works before they say, I have to do something just completely meaningful in my life?
Yeah, it's a very insightful question, and I'm going to reframe it because you're absolutely on to something, but I want to reframe it. It's not that they're putting too much emphasis on meaning. In fact, I'm actually glad that this younger generation cares so much about meaning in their work, doing meaningful work. The challenge is that they are impatient and they want to step into that tremendous meaningful work early on, and they're forgetting that this is a ladder, to use an analogy that's easier to understand. They're trying to step on rung 4 or 5 or 6 or way up the ladder. That's what they want, because all of us in our youth are more impatient than we are as we get older and mature. So what they're failing to realize is that to truly step into that meaningful work, they have to do what you did, Will. And that's where you're absolutely right. You're going to have to work multiple day jobs in order to step into the dream job. So think of it as rung number one, and I got to win in the now. That allows me to step into rung number two. Maybe I can jump up to rung 3, but I'm still going to have to keep climbing. And so what I teach on the Ken Coleman Show, and what I teach and everything I write, is not a get successful quick scheme, because that's fool's gold. It's a mirage. And so my challenge to young people in this situation is, hey, figure out what that mountaintop is. And that's why I wrote From Paycheck to Purpose. We've got a great assessment, 20-minute assessment at kencoleman.com. Get clear career assessment, really help you identify that direction and mountaintop. But now you've got to say, all right, I've got to figure out what's it going to take to get qualified, to step into base camp and keep moving up. So I think you bring up a very good point. And I think I would say patience, 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 because you're going to have to spend some time in multiple day jobs, move up, and then eventually you step into the dream job.
Yeah, it's not instant gratification. I think there's a lot of entitlement, and that's kind of one of the bigger problems of our generation. You know, despite having a very passionate generation, I think, of young people, whether that's in the right way or sometimes not the right way, I think that the entitlement and the lack of patience really holds us back.
Well, let's just talk about this for a second, because I'm glad you bring this up, and I don't want to come across as a parent, so I want to throw some grace into this conversation.
You could wear a backwards hat or something, and, you know.
There we go. Right. I should do that. I need a backwards hat right now. But here's the deal. The temptation is to want it so quickly for your generation, and the reason is because that's the world you've grown up in. We're talking about unbelievable technology and accessibility and comfortability and all of the things. And so your generation has been conditioned. There's nothing wrong with this generation, this audience. I want you to hear me say this. In fact, I hate it. I'm a Gen Xer. I hate it when Gen Xers or boomers talk about millennials or Generation Z in a negative light, because the reality is you're no different than previous generations, other than you have been conditioned by culture to expect things to happen faster in every area of your life. But that is not a fault. That's an environment. And those of you that are listening today that have something deep on your heart and you long to make a difference in this world, you're going to have to fight that because you've been conditioned that way. And so what you need to do is step back for a moment and read of the great women and great men of history who've done something significant and read about their journey. It did not happen overnight. And I would suggest to you, as I write in this book, and we use the mountain metaphor, when you get in the dream job stage 6, the view changes. You've been looking up the whole time. And eventually, when you get to the top of that mountain, I got to tell you, it's not as sweet without the struggle. It doesn't matter as much if you don't struggle for it. And I got to tell you, it was a 10-year journey for me. So I'm a guy who's on top of the mountain, but now the view's changed. And now it's expanding the vision. And I got to tell you, It's always worth it. It is the struggle. It is the process that makes the whole journey worth it.
Oh, fantastic, guys. Find your mountain and climb to the top of it. That is advice from Ken Coleman, Ramsey personality, author of From Paycheck to Purpose, The Clear Path to Doing Work You Love. Ken, how can people support you?
Well, you know, I just want you to support yourself. I want you to give this book a chance. You know, I want you to read a book that's written for anybody who wants more and there's a gap and you want to figure out how do I move across this gap to do something that matters deeply to me, to be the best version of myself. That's who I am writing and coaching and teaching for. So buy the book From Paycheck to Purpose, kencoleman.com. Or, hey, if you want to kick the tires, take the Get Clear Career Assessment, because that's the compass. And then the book helps you walk up the mountain. But both of those tools you can get at a great bundle for only $40 at kencoleman.com. And get clear, because once you're clear, you're going to be confident and there's nobody that's going to stop you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on again.
Thanks for having me.
There we go, guys. Find your mountain. You guys comment down below. What is your mountain?
What is your, Amala, what's your mountain?
My mountain, I guess, is my current job. I'm very passionate about what I do these days. So I think I'm on my mountain. I think I'm like...
Amala's mountain is dealing with Will Witt every day.
Oh, and if that's my mountain, I'm at Summit the lowest. It. I'm at the lowest point of that mountain. I'm not looking over that thing in a long while.
Summit it. I'm a 14er.
What's your mountain?
Insurmountable fear of loneliness and death.
Wow.
But I think I'm getting close to it. Yeah,
I can see it. Mm-hmm. I see it in your eyes. You know,
if you cannot pass over the mountain, you could go under it. The mines of Moria.
Oh my,
my cousin Balin.
Okay, we're gonna get off of this one before we go down the Lord of the Rings rabbit hole here. Now, somebody who might have reached the peak of his mountain, okay, today is Paul Rudd. He's been labeled sexiest man alive. Maybe we should do a poll on this on below the show in the live chat. Is Paul Rudd the sexiest man alive?
No.
Here's Paul Rudd, by the way. If you guys don't know who Paul Rudd is, you may recognize him from Ant-Man, mm-hmm. Fundamentals of Caring.
Knocked Up.
Mm-hmm. He's been in a lot for, yeah, he's been an actor for a very long time. Clueless. He's very funny. Uh-huh. Clueless. Yes. He was the heartthrob in Clueless.
Halloween H2O.
Very cute and Clueless.
Yeah.
Very cute in Fundamentals of Caring.
Listen, he's not a bad looking guy, but he's definitely not the sexiest man alive.
82% no so far.
Yeah. He's definitely not the sexiest man alive. Did he pay for this?
That's
he must have
rude.
Given them money.
No, a lot of people. Paul Rudd is known for being just well loved, internationally. He's very well known for that.
So
being
was Gandhi. Just, would you give okay. Gandhi sexiest
hold
man
on,
alive?
Hold on. He's also extremely adorable and he's unproblematic. So I think that's why he's gotten
but the
sexiest man alive.
You just gave things that don't qualify for sexy.
I know, but
he's
I like
not
Paul
the
Rudd.
Sexiest. I like
and
Paul
I think
Rudd
this
too.
Is a win for him.
No, I'm not saying it's, of course it's a win. I mean, he's punching
above his
weight. His
wife is probably like, what's up, y'all?
You know who the real sexiest man alive is? Elliot Page.
Elliot Page.
Surprised
that
agreed.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, why wasn't she chosen?
It's a great question. Why don't you go ask him?
I will ask them.
Yeah, but Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd is the winner this year.
Who do you think should be sexiest man alive?
Okay, we discussed this. I have my celebrity crushes.
Top three, Scott, Will Witt, and who's your third, Amala?
Taylor.
Okay, well, yeah.
Anyways, yeah, the three guys that I work with are my sexiest men alive. No, I think... Okay, what did I say? We talked about Matthew McConaughey. We pretty much came to a consensus that Matthew McConaughey, my favorite Matthew McConaughey, is Matthew McConaughey as Detective Cole in True Detective.
Mm-hmm.
That all he's right. fine. That man's fine. So.
And he's fine.
Yeah.
He's fine.
He's fine.
He's fine.
He's fine. I also really love Milo Ventimiglia from This Is Us.
No beta. Idea who that is.
He's not a beta at all.
No idea what that show is. What is This Is Us?
It's a show that centers around a family. It's a drama, and he plays the father, and he's like the best father to exist.
It's a super sappy show.
Yeah, it sounds horrible.
It's sappy-ish.
It's like a sitcom?
No, it's not a sitcom. It's a drama.
Amala lost all credibility after saying Pete Davidson is hot.
I said he's
exactly.
cute. I didn't say Pete Davidson is hot.
Is Pete Davidson sexiest man alive?
No, no, no.
Am I the sexiest man
I'm
alive?
I'm not answering that.
More than Paul Rudd? Pete Davidson?
Huh?
Pete Davidson or Paul Rudd?
Paul Rudd.
All right.
Yeah. I would go for Paul Rudd before I go for Pete Davidson.
All right, I'd agree with that. Yeah. I would say sexiest man alive is probably Viggo Mortensen or
don't know who that is.
Brad Pitt.
Okay, Taylor.
Viggo Mortensen's quickly. Lord of the Rings.
Okay,
Aragorn.
Aragorn. Yeah.
Cool.
I don't know. I'm gonna. I don't know. This is hard for me.
McConaughey.
Just choose someone. Who's the sexiest man in the earth?
Brad Pitt.
if you're going to force me.
Will Witt.
No. If you're going to force me, Brad Pitt in 1993.
Someone in the chat said Dennis Prager.
You know what? You can love
wisdom
a man.
Wisdom is sexy.
Yeah.
Even the left can't deny that man's just sexy demeanor.
Demeanor.
He walks in a room and women faint.
That is, no, it is very true. Dennis has a very strong effect on women. He really does.
He does. No, he does.
He has what we call Dennis Prager groupies that follow him to all of his events. Mm-hmm. They are typically older women.
Right.
But nevertheless, he does have a set of groupies.
Yeah. No, he gets no relief factor when he's around women. Because they,
no.
Because they are just all over him.
Oh my gosh.
It's true.
Dennis is going to be on our show tomorrow. Maybe we'll discuss his groupies with him. See how he feels about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, guys.
Trisha says Amala has really bad taste.
Yeah, she does.
I don't have really bad taste. Wow.
Okay. Brad Pitt is so hot.
He's so great.
No, he's so hot. He was hot. I mean, he was. Yeah, he's not that hot anymore. Like Leonardo DiCaprio was so hot and Johnny Depp. Like they were very good looking men.
Sure.
You know? And this isn't gay for me saying this. You can understand when a man is hot. Right? As a man. You can get it. Okay?
We're going to move on from this from this subject matter. We have one more thing to discuss. And that is a TV show. Will used to watch this TV show. I finished up this TV show with season 3. It's a TV show called You on Netflix.
Me?
It's very popular. Not you, Will. You. The show is called You.
I love that show.
You just released its season 3, and I want to give you guys my quick review of the show and point out the propaganda in this particular show. Now, You centers around these two main characters in this first photo. You'll see a beautiful Love Quinn on the left and Penn Badgley, who plays Joe Goldberg on the right. They're a married couple who happens to be serial killers. So that's their whole shtick in this show. Remember that. They are literal serial killers, and not for good reason, just serial killing for their own benefit. So Love and Joe are married. In the middle, we have Theo, a new character introduced in season 3, who introduces himself by saying, "I'm a femgen major, a feminist gender sociology studies major." So that's Theo. Who is very beta. He is a very, very much a soy boy. Anybody studying femgen sociology in college is probably very beta. And on the very right, we have Gil. Now, I want to tell the story of Gil and how he is portrayed in season 3. Gil is a Christian, conservative man who is sort of the bastion of just goodness in this town. He's never done a thing wrong in his life. Gil made the massive mistake, in air quotes, of not vaccinating his children. Not for COVID-19.
They're already making stuff about vaccination. They're already Netflix.
Let's talk about how far they go with this very quickly. Gil chose to not get his kids vaccinated, not for COVID-19, but for the measles. His kids get the measles and they transmit the measles to Love and Joe's child, Henry. Henry gets the measles as a baby and ends up in the hospital. Okay, not cool, not a fun time, I'm imagining, for both parents. What happens is Love and Joe try to find out who gave their baby measles. They never find out, whatever. One day Love is at work and good old Christian Gil walks in and says, "Love, I came to visit you and to buy some stuff from your bakery. I just wanted to let you know it was my kids who gave your son measles. I apologize. I just figured you should know, out of the goodness of his own heart, you should know that it was my kids. My kids got the measles. They were fine. I'm so sorry to hear that Henry was hospitalized." He goes on to explain, "The reason I didn't vaccinate my children is because I believe in their natural immunity, and my kids did kick the measles, which I think is a great thing. And that natural immunity is far stronger than any immunity that they would get from a vaccine." Big mistake for Gil to say that. He starts to walk away and Love interrupts him and goes, "Hey, Gil." He turns around and she bashes him over the head.
Oh, no.
That's how the scene ends. And she bashes the anti-vaxxer in the head and knocks him unconscious. Gil does spoiler alert for those of you who are going to watch this, Gil does end up dead in the end, not because of love.
No, Gil.
Gil ends up dead. So essentially what they've done is they've taken this upstanding Christian conservative man, and because he's an anti-vaxxer, chose not to vax his kids, he gets beat over the head and it's somehow justified. Mm-hmm. And these two serial killers, mind you, serial killers, are the moral upstanding people who were totally right for essentially killing a man because he chose to not vaccinate his kids.
I didn't watch this season.
Yeah.
But I watched the other two seasons.
Yeah.
I liked the first season. The second season was okay. Didn't really like Love's character. But the first season with Beck, Beck was hot. And I liked watching that show. But that show was good. The first season was really good. It was interesting and kind of entertaining. It had a moral gray area that was interesting to kind of dissect. But yeah, it's just propaganda now. All the shows turn to propaganda.
It is just propaganda. And they go to the hospital and one of the nurses goes, you would think that everybody would be vaccinated now with everything that's happening with COVID-19, but there's still idiots out there. This is what people are watching. This is what media outlets are producing you.
This is what the writers in the writer's room of this show are like, oh yeah, if we put he's an anti-vaxxer in there, that would be really good, right? It would be so, so great and so fun. It's like who is Jimmy Kimmel and the other guy on CBS, what's his name? The late
Jimmy
night
Fallon?
Guys. No, the...
Conan?
Stephen Colbert.
Stephen Colbert. It's like... Who is in the writer's room writing this stuff about, oh, what if we get people to dress up like giant needles and make a song about vaccines? Like, that would be so funny, right? Or that SNL sketch we watched the other night. It's like, this is self-congratulatory echo chamber, like, clapter that they're going after, you know? And it's really sad for, like, Netflix's marquee shows that apparently had better seasons earlier that have just everything. The woke monster eats everything.
It's like Outer Banks. Outer Banks, the first season was, I mean, it was horrible, but it was great. It was the best, even despite how horrible it was. And the second season had some weird race stuff in it, but it also was just terrible. That didn't really have to deal with the woke stuff, but just the second season was ruined. It was not very good.
Just a side note.
They destroy everything.
What was really interesting in when I was watching you is that not only was there just really overt propaganda, but there was some subliminal messaging in it too. I was watching the final episode and there's a talk between two of the extras in this show that is supposed to be just background language, background talking for you to listen to when you're listening to the true dialogue. And one of the extras goes, you hear about all the people moving out of New York because of the COVID-19 lockdowns and the mandates? And the other extra goes, oh, that was happening long before COVID-19. It was actually the previous election. That's what the extras are talking about in the show.
What?
Isn't that crazy?
I think so.
That's wild. So they're trying to repaint the Great Exodus out of like New York City and California and saying that it's actually Donald Trump's fault.
Nice. No, it makes perfect sense.
It's just so weird.
You don't need truth.
It's so weird once you start watching these shows and recognizing the actual propaganda in them.
Truth is for losers.
Yeah.
Okay? Lying is all the rage nowadays.
Lying is all the rage.
Moral superiority is all the rage.
But yeah, I just want to talk about propaganda and shows. And now, if you're watching our show on a daily basis and you go watch Netflix or whatever's on TV, I'm sure you'll start to recognize it too. And once you do, you can't unsee it.
Yeah. And you'll finally recognize that we are propaganda. Which is what our plan was the whole time.
Right, right. We are just part of the machine.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, that is our show for today. Thank you so much for watching. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live. 2:30 PST, 5:30 Eastern. If you'd like to listen to us rather than watch, go to Google Play, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review on all of those platforms to let us know that you love our show. Thank you so much for supporting us. We will be back tomorrow at 2:30 with a new show.
That is true.
My throat hurts too much to continue doing the whole spiel. So that's all you get
for
today.
We'll get you some medicine. Some horse dewormer.
We'll get you some chocolate chocolate chip ice cream.
We'll get you some chocolate chip
chocolate
ice cream.
Chocolate horse dewormer. It's going to be great.
Thank you guys for watching.